My name is Aubrey Goodman, and this is Distilled. Welcome to the show. You can find us on the web at distilledradio.com or on Twitter at distilledradio. You can find me on Twitter at Aubrey Goodman, exactly how it sounds. And that'll do for our intros. I am joined again here in the studio by my friend Chris Ross to talk about some expansions on our last topic. I think we can forego an intro.
Yeah.
But I think I would love to dive in. So The last time, when you last met our heroes, sorry for that. I've always wanted to say that on the air.
Wait, can I do my Twitter handle? Because I just got Twitter.
Oh, yeah, you did. That's right.
I never had Twitter before this.
Yeah, man. And that's it. Get it out.
My Twitter is at @muscle_time. So muscle time, then Twitter.
So you can find Chris clearly on Twitter that way. Please do. He has only 2 followers.
I have 0 posts so far. So I don't know what to post about.
I guess you've only posted about us. So
yeah. So I guess
we're batting 1,000.
That's it.
Amazing. Awesome. Thanks for that. Cool. So yeah. Last time we talked about how virtual reality is changing the way that people work out. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely changing the way that I'm working out. At least in the last month, it has not changed the way I worked out because my laptop crashed and I can't play VR, which makes me very sad.
Yeah.
But when I get that fixed, I'm going to be resuming my very exciting 3 or 4 days a week, like an hour at a time. Box VR and Beat Saber, those two have become absolutely a staple for me. And so last time we talked a lot about Beat Saber. I wanted to expand today to talk a little bit more about all that. But before we go too far into that, I wanted to give just a shout out that it may be a loud environment for us here as we are currently recording in San Francisco during Pride weekend. So there's, this studio is at the top of the hill, at Knob Hill. And so we hear everything all over the city. And so pardon any celebratory sounds you hear outside. That's just, you know, normal for San Francisco Pride weekend.
That's the way it goes in the city.
You know, shout out to all our gay and LGBT friends. So let's get in.
Yeah,
let's get into it, man.
Yeah. Why aren't
it's
we
Carnival, right? They're out there partying, yeah. And maybe so. There's this like weird segue, right? Where you're like, are you cool or not cool because you're partying in virtual reality? I don't know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Maybe one day there won't be so much of a stigma associated to that. But
that's true.
One of the things that we can do to cut down on that stigma is to get genuine results with our actual physical bodies in a virtual world. So
yeah,
for me, that has manifested as like when I started doing this VR thing in an exercise capacity, like on the regular, I immediately started to do data collection. As we talked about, I started doing all the stuff with heart rate measurements and just getting really, really down into the details. And I started to find that over time, I had a harder time getting my heart rate up into that higher level. Mm-hmm. And so I want to talk about like the kinds of the reasons for that, and also just kind of like the trajectory of that. So you had said something about how the movement, like there's like a learning, you learn the movements of a thing and that makes you more skilled in it. It means that the level of energy you have to spend to get to the goal is less. So can you walk us through that?
Totally. Yeah. You know, when you're a beginner in a motor skill, when you're learning something for the very first time, typically what we see, is that novice or amateur individuals spend more time or more energy performing a task. Now that is to say that, you know, if you have someone who can't run very fast and they're just learning how to sprint, and you have someone who is an elite sprinter, which one performs, you know, with a higher energy cost? Sure, the elite sprinter is going to perform at a higher energy cost because they're running at a faster pace. But if you were going to regulate for that overall speed that they have, the person that's the amateur is going to have much more energy cost because they're more rigid, they're more tense. You know, there's all these issues you have to solve when you're learning something. You have a task, you have a goal. How do you get your body to perform this motion and to do it with success criteria? For Beat Saber, it's what? Hitting the blocks in the right direction.
Directionality. Yeah, it's like you have to slash at a block in a particular direction. You have to do it in a particular, very planar kind of movement. Mm. And it's very critical if you're not in it, like perfectly on plane. So like it's very, very sensitive to the specifics of the kinematics, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like the specific movements of the body, this system is accurately measuring that at 90 frames per second.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how you get a higher score is by being more physically precise, which I love.
Yeah. You get feedback.
Because it's like a direct closed loop feedback, which it's hard to get that from a kinesthetic perspective.
Absolutely. It's like having a coach telling you're doing something wrong.
Totally.
Or, you know, grading you, you know, it's like, like whenever you learn something, it's like you speed up your progress so much faster. If you have a coach or someone, a tutor, anything that just tells you what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, and gives you kind of like a score and some kind of knowledge of your performance is what we would call it, you know? So that's something that, you know, the opposite would be like, you know, watching a YouTube video and practicing on your own. And am I doing it right? I have no idea, you know?
Yeah. I've always said, you know, this violin I have in the corner behind me is it does a great job of not learning anything for me while it's sitting there. I don't learn anything about violin by reading books about violin. I don't learn anything about violin by listening to violin. I learn only by practicing, which I sadly do not get enough of.
You know, it's interesting. And this is a different topic, but there's a lot of people who kind of forget that if you want to be good at something, you just need to spend not only time practicing this deliberately, but you have to spend time doing it mindfully.
Yeah.
And that's the hard thing.
For sure.
It's like you can't just mindlessly like go through a scale on the violin or, you know, practice some kind of move in a martial art. You have to like think about how you're doing it, you know, have it be declarative, have it all these other aspects of this motion so that you actually like really integrate that into your system, you know, how you learn it.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, like this is a common theme on this show. We've talked about practice and music before and how specifically we talked about how the things that we take for granted as developers and in software, to take a strange segue for a second, the things we take it for granted in software engineering, you know, people say, oh, like, I'm not going to think about this like user login because I've written that user login tool like 50 times. Mm. Why do I need to think more or practice more? I've had enough practice. And that is like the exact backwards attitude.
Yeah.
The thing you should be practicing the most is the simplest thing. The thing you take the most for granted is probably the weakest place, really, when you think about it, because you don't practice it.
Yeah, it's you know, it's the fundamentals that are the most basic
exactly
thing, the most important thing.
If you don't do scales, this was the argument were making. Like, if you don't do scales, if you're a pianist and you want to be better at the piano, the way you do that is by practicing scales, by practicing, by practicing, by practicing, by practicing. Repetition over, when it comes to motor skills, repetition is like the by far and away the best mode to learn.
You know, you'd think people would understand this, but I feel like there's so many individuals out there that just kind of like run around and you want to learn something cool. Like, for example, like I started learning Muay Thai. This is like Thai kickboxing, right? Mm-hmm. So my coach is actually a friend of mine from high school and who I haven't seen for some time and all of a sudden can beat me up really bad. I'm like, what happened to you, man?
What did you do? Did you get a Matrix plug in the back of the head?
Yeah. Like, he's still the same awesome, like goofy, funny guy. But when, you know, he sparred with me one time,
and he totally schooled you.
No idea what was going on until I ended up on my back.
Yep.
You know, and basically, you know, every single coach, or I should say good coach, good music teacher, everyone I had that knew what they were doing, they're accomplished, they always had the same thing and they always emphasized fundamentals.
Yeah.
You know, spend time practicing this scale, spend time practicing your footwork, spend time practicing the simplest thing, but get good at that. And it's, for some reason, I think intuitively as a student, we see the fancy stuff and I want to learn that solo. that's like, which is like 10 years beyond you, you know, right. Or like, I want to learn this really cool. He made a joke about it. He's like, everyone wants to learn a spinning back fist, but yeah. No one wants to learn how to do like just basic footwork. And it's true. You know, it's like,
that shit is hard, by the way.
Yeah. It's yeah.
hitting someone yeah. accurately with a spinning back fist. Oh, is yeah, very hard. Right. You have like a quarter of a second to yeah. plan it. And then 50 milliseconds to yeah. hit your target.
And how dangerous. It's like you're turning your back to your
exactly.
opponent. Like you never want to do that, but
it's very yeah. counter to everything you're taught as yeah. a martial artist for sure.
So yeah, that's the simplest thing. You want to learn something, spend time doing the fundamentals, spend time just going over and over and over and over again. That's why I think there's so many people who don't end up learning a skill well and who drop out. I mean, there's other reasons too for motivational aspects, but to become that group, to be part of that group that makes it to that like virtuosity and their great mastery of their skill, they're not doing anything super fancy. There's no, you know,
no. They're just not doing anything else.
Yeah.
They're literally just, doing yeah. only that.
They're just spending
they're planning,
time practicing.
They're practicing. Yeah. They're thinking about it in the shower. They're dreaming about it.
Yeah.
They innovate some new movement or some way to save a little bit of energy.
Yeah.
Along the way,
yeah.
they're like, oh, if I just drop my hip a little bit right there,
yeah.
I could save like, I mean, it's not like they save, oh, I'll save 20 kilojoules.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
no one's thinking about it like
but
that.
But you feel it.
But you'll definitely you feel it because it. You're less fatigued, you learn. And so like,
yeah.
I feel like to get back to VR, like mm-hmm. there's something incredibly compelling yeah. about the physical connection between a stereo environment
yeah,
where
yeah.
you have the ability to see depth yeah. really implicitly.
Yeah.
There's no trying to figure out whether that thing is there.
Yeah.
And in some games, they even take into consideration mm-hmm. occlusion of environmental things like, yeah. oh, we'll put a tree right in front of that prize mm-hmm. that we want you to find. But the only way to find the prize is to duck behind the tree
yeah.
and then you see the prize. So that stuff, that three-dimensionality of it is, I personally believe, as someone who has tangentially, mm-hmm. or I would say cursorily, practiced martial arts for a long time, and as a very long, long time yogi,
mm-hmm,
body mechanics and precision is,
yeah.
that is a science that is new to me.
Yeah.
And I've been yeah. practicing science for a long time, and it's like, it's yeah. hard to get to that mastery.
Yeah.
It's hard. And the environmental influence I think is so important. So where yeah. I'm going with this is like the hand-eye coordination of mm-hmm. of being able to have a stereoscopic environment.
Yeah.
You have, in the case of Beat Saber, you have blocks flying at your face and there's walls, and if you don't get out of the way, you just lose right away.
Yeah.
If you yeah. don't duck when the bar comes and hits your face, you lose right
yeah.
away.
Yeah.
And you learn it hard. Sometimes people take 20 times to learn that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the same thing with real world martial arts. Like
yeah.
they say, don't stand where you can be punched.
Yeah. Yeah. Above all like, else, don't get
don't,
hit.
Don't stand there. Don't wherever hit. That is, wherever your opponent can yeah. hit you, don't stand there.
Well, you know, there's like with Beat Saber, like with martial arts, you know, when you jump into this thing, there's so many different things to learn and so many different aspects of the motor skill that one interesting thing I've seen people, this is just anecdote. One interesting thing I've seen, people do when they first get into VR is they treat VR as if it's not an analog to their actual reality. Like they don't,
which is the exact opposite of
VR.
VR.
Yeah. It's like, no, you don't have a controller in your hand, or you do, but not
your
just
head
a D-pad.
Is the controller.
Yeah. Your head, your body is a controller.
The way you move.
Yeah. People will abstain from solving a problem that they solve every single day in their normal lives of like, yeah, like you said, bending around a tree to see what's around it, or just move around an object. They won't. Yeah. They will not do that until they build that kind of like understanding.
I,
you know,
I loved how Oculus has actually built this subconscious behavior right into the onboarding experience.
Yeah,
because there's a tutorial you experience. Anybody who has an Oculus Rift has experienced this. There's like a floating robot, and he comes apart or comes together from what look like a bunch of what are they, VHS tapes.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
But he
yeah.
gives you the little discs, and
yeah.
you have to like put the disc in the thing, and there's no way to get through yeah. the experience without interacting with this strange virtual creature. But the great thing about it is that they do some really, really important things in that onboarding step, which
yeah.
is like they show you this silly gun with like targets and you have to shoot at the targets. There's like a thing that's basically like a, what would you call it? Like a firework, and you have to pull the tab.
Yeah,
but that means two hands have to grab. It's training on how you interact in a virtual way.
Yeah.
Without even telling you that it's doing that.
And that is smart onboarding.
Absolutely.
It's aside from saying, hey, pull this tab and let the rocket
they don't
go,
give you any advice at all. They literally like, make you figure it out.
They're giving you a rocket. You
know
what a rocket
does. Nothing else you can do.
And
there's a gate.
Yeah. I
Once
know
you
how
do
to
that action.
Yeah.
And you have to do it 3-4 times.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
That's the best part.
Yeah.
They train you inherently with the repetition. And that's, that's why we're really kind of going into this. It's like, there's so many parallels between the things you learn in the physical world and the things you learn in the virtual world. And when those things are coupled in a way that is experiential based on the things you expect based on a normal three-dimensional stereoscopic universe, just like your eyeballs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That gives you so much more of a compelling transition, I guess.
Yeah.
The thing for me that's it's interesting is so we talked about Box VR a bit last time, and I want to dig into that. I discovered through watching, just again, like observing how my score changes based on my personal behavior.
Yeah.
And you and I had said like we were like, well, we think we can cheat if you just like snap punch right at the exact time. Yeah. And maybe you can, but that shit is actually harder than just doing like a shadow box kind of thing and really genuinely try. Like I tried both of those.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to kind of game the system and I found that it does sort of get you there, but I think you get like a 70% chance of the score you would get if you genuinely worked at it.
Yeah.
If you try to cheat, it will give you like some points, but you won't get the most. So I'm curious, like, you had said that you felt like you could kind of like do these pop motions and that you had to punch like ahead of the uppercut, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, Box VR was great for just pure exercise. I loved it.
Oh yeah.
But
me too.
I did something that I saw a lot of other people do in VR, and that's like at the beginning of a game or even the experience, my first intent is to figure out what can I do? But then after some time I figure out, wait, what can't I do?
Yeah, they constrain you.
Yeah, where are the constraints in this environment? Like, do I have to punch it this way every single time, or do I just kind of like a little tap right at the right moment and I'll get the same outcome? You know, which sucks because the whole point of Box VR is to work out, not to get a higher score, essentially, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, Box VR is great. And I felt like I kind of suspended disbelief. I'm like, yeah, you can kind of cheese the system a little bit, but I want to work on my shadow box. I want to work on getting a good workout and my whole conditioning. And
so you get the breath work in there.
Yeah. I want to make it count. I'm going to pretend like I need to do this motion.
Yeah.
And you know what? I felt better next time I stepped into my Muay Thai class and I was like, oh, it's not bad.
Exactly. You know? Because of that repetitive training.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah.
The only downside I find so far about virtual reality training is that every so often, maybe, once in 100 punches, you accidentally punch yourself in the face.
Yeah.
Which is to say, like, I'm showing this in real life, like, you can see that.
The controllers.
The touch controllers for Oculus Rift have rings around them that are there specifically to prevent you from accidentally beating the shit out of them and your hands against other things. But sometimes they impact the headset.
That you have to pretend. Yeah, you forget your head is like part of this other thing that juts out in front
There's
of your eyes.
There's just a little bit more space.
Yeah.
Like a couple of inches really makes a difference. And especially if you're used to close quarters boxing like that,
that
headset makes a huge difference.
Well, you put your hands up to guard
and it blocks,
and there's this thing
right
there.
Right,
you just
it.
Bump your head in the, you know, bump your hands in, into your face.
So there's definitely some adaptation, I would say. But, speaking as someone who has, I've never like boxed professionally, of course.
Yeah. Neither have
but
I.
But like training with people and like definitely sparring for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is as close to a speed bag as I could get.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think it's even better than a speed bag because a speed bag is very specific.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a specific task and it doesn't necessarily couple itself so well to the wider spectrum of things. Like you have to duck, you have to dodge, you have to move over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
The stance stuff, like you have to left stance, right stance, switch and things like that.
Yeah, I don't want to go.
Chris laments the southpaw.
I just keep on doing it.
He's just like, no, I'm gonna stay in the right.
I don't want to. I know it's good to do that, and there's a part of there's a part of motor learning, a big part of motor learning when you're trying to learn a motor skill. Having variability of practice is huge. So if you practice something one particular way constantly that way, you know, I practice this punch every single time I practice it. I do it the same way with the same intent. I have this, I want full power, and I have this stance, whatever. That's good for making you good at that particular
one thing.
But it impairs you not only from being able to stretch it outside of that, but your retention of that task. Let's say you practice something once, you don't practice it for a little while, and you come back and do it again. Your retention is lower opposed to you practicing in a variety of ways.
This I loved about Box VR because they give you so many options.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things I don't know if you've played with it, the never-ending mode, the one that basically you go until you lose.
Yeah.
I got like 25 minutes into that. I was getting tired.
Like, it just never stops.
I found myself starting to fatigue and like missing stuff. And I was like, that's really genuinely like I can't swing fast enough to get the timing right. So I missed the thing. And I honestly, I think they're so close to like a good 80% of the real experience. The only thing you don't have from Box VR is actually getting punched in the face.
Yeah.
You know, somebody shifting your body,
shifting
your center of mass. Like that's the one thing you don't get. But
well, it's like pad work, but you don't get that impact. You don't get that reaction force.
But does it matter? Because you still have like the combo movements of the shoulders and the hips and all the other things.
I would, and this is just from my anecdote, but I can say that working with a coach or someone with pads and having them call out something as opposed to Box VR, which is essentially calling out something like a combo for you to do, but there's no impact. The no impact shadow box is harder because you don't, for one thing, you don't have something to hit. You don't get that, you know, equal and opposite reaction force, right? Mm-hmm. And that lack of that reaction force, which we usually rely on to like help you bring your fist back to your guard, it's not there. So you have to kind of like send a punch out and then slow it down with your own musculature and then bring it back to guard. That takes so much more energy, but it improves your conditioning, it improves your control.
Right.
So if you're ever like sparring with someone and you whiff a punch, you go for that left hook and you whiff it and it's not there, you're not going to spin in a circle, you know, falling. You're like, oh, I have control over this. I know what to do and bring it back. So I think it's harder in a way, you know?
I agree. And I think that's actually better for people. Yeah. So I would say
it's part of the puzzle for training.
First part, like if you're learning about how to box effectively.
Yeah.
How to move your hands, how to move your shoulders, how to move your hips.
Mm.
Like all of those things are like core columns, you know, pillars, if you will. Those things, you can teach that stuff in a virtual space and it conveys into a real space. So like the first thing they teach you often in like early in some martial arts is like hold the teacup flat. Mm-hmm. Don't drop it for a whole 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Just hold it straight out at attention. And again, I'm moving my arms like anybody in radio land can see that. But there's things that people do where they're like, the classic one is, or from a Western perspective is, I think, holding your back against the wall with your thighs parallel to the ground.
Oh, and yeah.
Like the knees wall bent thing. Wall squat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do that for a minute every day. You will have like amazing your benefits.
Control.
Like
so many
things will come from that. And you're not even moving.
Yeah. It's just pure what's called an isometric exercise.
Yeah. So that's, I think there's something to be said in the combination. So like, I totally agree with you that it's not the same, but it might be better in terms of a conditioning sense, in terms of like, a practice kind of thing.
Yeah.
If you take it seriously, if you do really pull your punches and shadow box, like you were saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for sure I have felt, I see my score go up when I do that. I feel better. I sweat more and I'm more exhausted after 20 minutes of doing it.
Yeah.
If I actively try.
Yeah.
To do that. Whereas if I try to cheat the system, I lose in the sense that I lose from a physiometric perspective. Like my body does not gain anything if I cheat. And that's awesome. I think there's so much to be said in like helping people not cheat.
Well, yeah, and the whole the point of the game is, you know, there's not really much of a progression for levels in a final boss. So it's like you cheating is really just kind of sucking the whole point out of the game. It's like, well, then what's the what am I doing? Why am I here? I really think, you know, and again, I'm not a professional fighter by any means, but I feel like it definitely gives a great construct for shadow boxing and shadow work because it's very immersive and it gives you combos nonstop. And usually when I'm shadow boxing, I'm, you know, making stuff up on my own.
There's level changes too. Like when you do that long, like the never ending one, they start like if you get about 15, 20 minutes in, they start doing level change.
Yeah.
And they'll do like combos that are like 20 combos, like 20 punches in a row where you have to go like low, mid, low, mid, high, low, mid. Like they make you duck, they make you dodge to the side. Like there's so many variants that they do. And I personally really, really appreciate that as a trainer, a trainee, somebody like actively trying to burn some calories. Like that stuff really matters. And I definitely see an actual physical improvement from that. Like I dropped 5 pounds in like 2-3 weeks and I was like not even trying that hard.
Well, so tell me about like, you know, the whole adaptation thing you're going through, like your heart rate's different.
Well, so like I started trying to get into more like the expert. I found myself getting higher and higher into the skill levels and being like, okay, I can do these expert levels now and I can do a whole expert level with, you know, miss nothing, full combo.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like super excited about that. And I realize I go back and I look at the heart rate stuff and it's like lower than the last time.
Yeah.
Like, what? I only burned 216 this time. Like, come on.
Yeah.
375, 250, like no, 215. Like, come on. Like the numbers are going down. This is not the way I want to trend.
Well, I mean,
I'm getting better, but I'm getting, I'm getting into better shape.
Yeah. That's why. we're kind of like focused on, I mean, it really depends on what your focus is, but I think in our society, we tend to focus a little more on calories. Like, you know, if I go in the gym and I'm not an athlete, I just want to work out and get in better shape. I still will focus on how many calories I burn, not necessarily how good I am at this motion, until you switch that mindset, until you want to lift heavier, until you want to like become someone who's a faster sprinter, then it changes a little bit. Yeah. But until that point, or if that point even comes up, it's like, I got to burn more calories. I got to burn more calories.
Right. But, or you know, lose more pounds.
Or lose more pounds. Well, right. Yeah. They translate. So, but it's such a good thing. I mean, you know, there's a lot of different things that you're going through that, you know, Aubrey, your body is changing. You're going through the change right now. So like, there's a lot of things.
You're
going to
give me the talk now?
Yeah, I got to give you the talk right now. So like, this is the talk. So like, you know, you're like physiologically, there's a lot of different things, you know, how efficient your muscles are, how good are they at both utilizing nutrients and, you know, how much mitochondria, which is the powerhouse of the cell. Yeah, I just have to say that because everyone knows that.
Of course.
Yeah. You know,
it's like from that how a bill becomes a law thing.
Yeah, right? It's like like your you know, your slow twitch muscles are like they're getting more mitochondria density and all these different things that are happening. But one of the most important things to think about is like what's happening in your heart.
Right.
You know, there's something called, you know, cardiac output, which is a combination of your heart rate and your stroke volume and all these little variables that go into that. And, you know, even down to how much your like arteries and your veins will respond to like the pressure that's put in them.
Sure. Everything is elastic.
Yeah.
So it has to kind of take a second to take this new high pressure impulse of new blood surging into the system and kind of react to that. And I can expect, as somebody who has a lot of experience with dynamic systems, that has to have some like resonance and stuff that's not necessarily great. So like in certain circumstances, I bet you there's things with, it feels good, but it's actually bad.
Yeah. Maybe. Like,
maybe your heart rate should not be as low as it is. And you need higher when it needs to be lower or whatever.
You could be at either extreme.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
You can have a very low heart rate and be an athlete. You're going to be very low heart rate and you know, just maybe too much medication, maybe, you know,
or altitude makes a huge difference. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of, there's a lot of bad pathologies that have that.
Makes me wonder if I work out at 17,000 feet with Beat Saber, do I just, do I just become a Jedi right away? Is that,
no, you're going to feel,
is that how I
horrible?
No, it's the other way.
Yeah. 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 You'll be like, give yourself terrible. Like a couple months and you'll be amazing when you come back.
When I'm in, at sea level for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. When you come back here. 000, yeah. But you know, you think about like how your heart's functioning, and one of the coolest things to think about, it's so simple. It's like, how much does your heart pump per beat?
Mm-hmm.
How much blood is shot out of your heart into the rest of your body for nutrients and stuff, like, you know, when that increases, or even how efficient your heart is at pumping the volume of blood inside the ventricles, how much is left after a beat? Your heart gets better at that. Your heart actually reduces
as
the
you
amount.
Practice,
that residual.
As you push harder, it gets better at it. And
absolutely.
It needs less each time.
Yeah. You have to, your heart beats less.
So,
We're
about out of time, but I want to talk about some of the metrics we can use to measure these things. So like what kind of tools do people have available to them that will give them the kind of feedback that will help them to know whether they're trending in a positive direction or not?
Well, heart rate monitor overall, for sure.
Okay.
You know, if you have something that shows.
So something like a Motive ring, for example.
Yes, absolutely. A Motive ring would be great, because not only do you get your heart rate and performance, but you get your resting heart rate.
Of course.
And when you're at rest, your heart rate gives a lot of information about the rest of your body. How hard is your heart working when you absolutely have nothing to do but lay down?
Right.
Or lie down.
That's your basal metabolic rate, if you will.
If you're sleeping.
Without it's very hard to calculate the effectiveness of your heart in normal scenario. Like your heart is beating because you're walking up a hill.
Yeah.
Comparing that against your basal metabolic rate gives us a great indication. Again, a closed loop point of reference.
Absolutely. It's something that, you know, even looking at how your heart responds to when you're finishing exercise, that's a huge thing. You know, we all know intuitively that someone out of shape can run a mile, and someone who is in shape runs a mile. And we can look at those two people and see someone who, the person that's out of shape, how they may be out of breath for a lot longer. Mm-hmm. Their heart rates can be elevated for a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes being in shape doesn't mean not having your heart rate jump up when you exercise, or not getting out of breath, or not sweating. It's more about how your heart or how your whole body responds to exercise by returning back to a normal resting state.
Right.
How fast you recover from that exercise.
Recovery time, for sure.
Absolutely. And that's something that, you know, like the Motive ring or like another device can help you understand, you know. It's really important.
For sure. So I'm hearing a third episode here.
Yeah, yeah.
That how can we follow through with this and talk through like the long-term benefits of the exercise that we do each day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us
again.
Thanks
for having me.
As always... we try to be as nerdy as possible. Hope y'all are appreciating that. And that'll do it for us today. So thank y'all for listening. This has been Distilled.